It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Sozi!
No, that's Matthew Sozi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sozi.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sozi. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes, and we have a blog, which you can check out at...
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
That is Kobe Slagle.
Yep.
We'll update the blog thing a little later on. We'll get to that. Joining me in studio, a gentleman who's been here before, the president and COO of the Indianapolis International Film Festival, as well as one of the grand poobahs over at the IMAX Theater downtown, Craig Mintz.
Hello, hello.
Thank you for coming. It's you don't have enough to do today.
No.
So I'm glad that this is your breather, yeah, so thank you.
It's my lunch break.
Right. Well, we'll feed you full of something today. And hanging out with us as well from down the hallway, the manager of community ambassadors here at WFYI, and also WFYI's St. Louis correspondent, because I'm the Detroit correspondent.
Certainly.
Jarrett Moore, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing real good.
He has also just gotten back about an hour and a half ago from a particular film.
Yes.
I don't think there's anything else opening today besides the one. Probably a smart move. All right. Let's give Curtis some rest. All right. I have to address this right off the bat. And it's funny because I've had to change the tone of this show three times in a matter of about 2 days. I'm not going to make this into a news thing, and I'm not going to go for the big picture. What I do want to say, and for those who hadn't checked on Facebook and on Twitter, I'm saying go to a movie this weekend. In fact, even more so, go tonight. If there's a midnight screening of something, go at midnight. I think I'm going to go see Ghostbusters tonight, which I hadn't planned on seeing because that's part of the midnight movie series at Landmark. But go see a movie this weekend. It doesn't have to be Dark Knight, but go see something. You don't have to talk about it. Just go. Just go. This is not the film's fault. It's not the theater's fault. It's not Hollywood's fault. And it's one person. And you can talk later about what you want to do with that one person, what that one person had, all the things that were done. Although, you know, as word got out, somebody brought a toddler to a midnight screening. Okay, that's another discussion, I guess, for another time in a few minutes. But go to a movie. Don't, you know, I guess in the old 9/11 thing, this guy would win if you don't go to a movie. Or as somebody, a friend of mine on Facebook posted that she didn't want to go to a movie, to which I responded immediately, no, you have to go. Go. Mm-hmm. We have reasons to stay in all the time. We have reasons to get scared all the time. And I don't care how big your TV is in your room. And I know that's another opponent of movies is how big. Although, you know, you can't beat the IMAX screen. But
that's right.
Yeah. But go to a movie. And if it's late, don't take the kids. Take the kids when they're up in the daytime. You don't have to go at night. You don't have to go at midnight. I am because I feel I need to. But go to a movie. That being said, going to move to the first change I had in the tone is there was a thing in the Onion and all over, of course, was, you know, starting on Wednesday night, Thursday morning, some of the early reviews started coming out, and yes, we will review the movie in just a few minutes, but the fact that Rotten Tomatoes had to cut all of the comment section off, a first. And if you've ever read comments online, and I know I have two aliases, You know that's true. But of course, I'm the clever one, not like the ones on YouTube. But, you know, there's been a death threat. There's been threats of bodily harm to film critics because they didn't like The Dark Knight Rises. Yeah. And this is a moment where, of course, it's one of those that for a lot of people, if you don't like this film, apparently you hate cinema. That's not the case. To quote Mike Gundy, that ain't true. That's not true. As a film critic, I look now, I'm 42. I've been reviewing films in Indianapolis for over a decade now. And I'm really glad I have a wife and a daughter. Seriously.
And a life.
That's the thing.
That's kind of the thing.
Yeah. I've reached a point, but there are some, you know, there are certain films with this program that I want to talk about as opposed to having to talk about. We'll get to that in the DVD portion in the second half of the show. But come on, guys. Seriously? You're getting your knickers in a twist over a bad review, which you're going to probably go see 2 to 3 times. And I know I make fun of the single unemployed basement dwellers. This doesn't help that stereotype. This doesn't help that. So come on, guys. It's a freaking movie. It's a movie. You should go see a movie, but it's still a freaking movie. So, okay. Now can we talk about the movie?
I think this is the time to go ahead and actually dig into the movie itself.
Okay, so we've done the very special film sociology portion of the show. We can now get into Kobe, do we have the new sound clip? This goes out to the fanboys who get upset. These are for the ones that are threatening with bodily harm or worse. Stuff that could actually get you in jail, by the way, if you post this online. But I think we have this.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
There we go. Now the tone
has
changed.
And the thing is, everyone who would write one of those reviews has watched the video that audio comes from. So there's some of you, the ones that actually have a life, have no idea why that's so funny.
But the rest
of you are like, wow, that was very appropriate.
For those who know, I think it's Greatest Freakout Ever 4 or 5, one of those. Okay, Kobe, play the trailer so we can talk about this movie.
There's a storm coming.
You sound like you're looking forward to it.
I'm adaptable.
What are you?
I'm Gotham's Reckoning.
Must be more severe.
Do you think he's coming back?
I don't know.
Why would you run, Bane?
You should be as afraid of him as I am.
I won't bury you. I've buried enough members of the Wayne family.
You don't owe these people anymore. You've given them everything.
Not everything. Not yet.
Warned me about getting into cars with strange men.
This isn't a car.
Symphonic sounds climbing
No, loud, no. Strong percussion.
Loud Hans Zimmer score, although not as loud as Inception.
No.
I think Hans Zimmer hit his apex with Inception. But okay, folks, here it is. For some reason, Gotham City's turned into Pittsburgh and not Chicago. Well, they got a good farm system, I think. Heinz Field, more available. Now we have Catwoman and Bane. Who I will say this about the film, Bane will no longer be Uma Thurman's sidekick or minion, thanks to
that was so bad.
That was so terrible. So yes, Bane has been saved. I guess. Of course, co-written and directed by Christopher Nolan, thus the raspy Christian Bale, and and of course all the characters are there. Marianne Cotillard shows up and Joseph Gordon-Levitt, not just because, well, probably because they also worked on Inception, but they're now part of the Christopher Nolan players. Do we have Steven again? Because here's what I think.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
I like the film. I didn't love the film, and now the fanboys are going to be angry with me about this.
Well, you know, the ones who've actually seen it, I don't think will be that angry with you. I mean, now if you start now,
if we keep playing this clip,
yeah.
if we keep saying to them,
shut up.
Now, see, I think the people who are making death threats from their mother's basements, of course, they're those kids who have, they just want you to like it because it's supposed to be liked, and they're fans of the first movie in a lot of people's minds, because
the first of the Nolan trilogy, because
I know plenty of people who never even got around. I mean, even though it was a hit, the first movie with the Scarecrow, the Batman Begins. I'll be honest, I waited till that movie came on cable. I just wasn't excited about. I mean, I just happened to know the Scarecrow as one of the criminals in Gotham City because I watched Batman the Animated Series back in the early 90s.
Now, but, you see, you're making me old because I remember Scarecrow as one of the secondary villains on the Super Friends when they had the United Colors of Benetton heroes in the late 70s.
But even then, he sat at the far end of the table with the League of Doom.
Yeah, exactly.
They did not really. He didn't. I don't even think he had.
You know what?
He didn't have a vote.
There weren't. You know why? Because there were not Scarecrow organizations griping that there weren't enough of their kind on TV.
Yeah. So I just, you know, so I mean, so by the time when I went to go see The Dark Knight, that's when I really was like, okay. That's where my standard comes from. Right. It really wasn't about the Scarecrow movie.
And I think to be fair with Batman Begins, I think a lot of people gave that a higher grade. I liked it, but it was still flawed because of the fact that it no longer was under the clutches of Joel Schumacher.
Well, that
and
that
the
too.
Bat nipples.
Yeah,
so.
That you know, I think because it was a serious tone Batman, and people were kind of waiting on that, especially people who liked the first two Burton duo Batman movies, and then it just took such a dramatic turn.
So you had Killian Murphy, who by the way shows up again, nice to see him. He's also part of the Christopher Nolan players. So you had Scarecrow, which wasn't all that fascinating, and Tom Wilkinson and his funny Sopranos accent, and then we have Heath Ledger in the second film, Oscar-winning Heath Ledger. And,
it's going to be hard to follow that.
And with that, we have Bane, and I'm going to be snarky about this because I'm an old person. I remember when I watched Dark Knight, as much as I love Heath Ledger in that film, at times he sounded like Mark Addy, the English actor, doing his Chicago accent in the series Still Standing. Well, Bane in this film at times sounds like a morning zoo cruise impression of Sean Connery. You know, not even the good Sean Connery impressions. The really silly, like if a morning show kept getting phone calls and somebody was on the phone doing Sean Connery. That's what Bane sounded like at times. So I know that they had to go in a different direction compared to the Joker, and they did. This is a guy who's physically stronger. The thing about this film, and I think it should have been probably 30 minutes shorter, because, and I'm not going to get into a whole political rant because I know, yes, we've seen the pictures of Mitt Romney as Bane, and the whole Occupy Gotham City thing, and who's the 99, and who's the one. That's not my problem with this film. The film turns into Red Dawn. In about maybe halfway through the film, there's a lot of people walking around occupied Pittsburgh, Gotham City, trying to get things done. And I wanted, Jarrett, you brought up a very specifically cool point that I wish I had thought of when it comes to the movement of one Bruce Wayne.
Well, you know, not to give away too much,
no.
but there's a part of the movie where I'm like, how is it that he's able, you know, for all the adversity he goes through the movie, like there are certain parts of the movie where it just seems like he's able to just move all over the world with relatively no problems at all,
like
while
nobody notices,
like,
he's
right,
gone.
Like
even though he's probably the most visible billionaire,
while
in the
everyone
world.
Else seems to be trapped in Pittsburgh / Gotham City, but you know, Bruce Wayne, you know, without passport or ID, can seem to get from wherever, from the Middle East to Gotham City, like there's no problem, you know.
Right.
So like, you know, that's not giving away anything. But
no.
Anyone who's seen the movie, you're like, wow, how did that happen? You know, where there's all these problems, and somehow Bruce Wayne is still able to, almost without resource, get from one side of the globe to the other.
It's the same way Tom Cruise is able to watch a football game in Phoenix in Jerry Maguire and then, you know, spend quality time with his client, get into a plane, fly to L.A., and the women's group that are still bashing men are still waiting for him.
You know, and I hate, and the thing is, I hate to apply like all this real world logic to
not the real world, not the show.
But at the same time, like, that's part of why I think people have liked Christopher Nolan's versions of these movies so much, is because they are set in
reality.
In reality. Like, you know, Batman has to go to the doctor in these movies.
And it's funny you mention that, because there's a sequence. Again, we're not going to give away anything, but there is a moment where you see a clock ticking, and my brain went, oh, we're going to get all 11 minutes of it because it's Christopher Nolan. We're going to get the, because I kept thinking of the car falling off the bridge in Inception,
right,
which took 25 minutes with 20 minutes of bomb from Hans Zimmer. I will say, despite kind of a draggy middle, and they probably could have tightened up at the beginning a little bit. There was an Inception beginning, if there ever was one,
mm-hmm.
that involves a plane and gravity. It does kind of have a slam bang ending. There's a couple of moments that, and we had a pretty quiet group at IMAX on Wednesday.
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of odd, but there were two moments in particular that made people gasp and cheer slightly, which, and neither one I can't really give away, but, Nolan's not going to make another one of these. And I'm concerned, of course, is that they're going to find somebody less,
talented. That's what happens in Hollywood.
Yeah,
just to say less talented.
I was going to say less talented. Fine, we'll get there. And I think the other thing that's kind of missing from this film, but I know why Nolan was doing it, there's not a whole lot of fun in this film. The most fun in this film is Anne Hathaway, and not just because we're pig men and we like to look at her in the cat suit, but she's really enjoying getting to play Catwoman. And, of course, the way she's played in this is she's – and this is not a giveaway, she's kind of torn over who her allegiance should be. You know, they could have really good-looking babies with raspy voices, or
self-preservation.
Right. Or, yeah, she could look out for number one.
Yeah. I mean, which is Catwoman. They did nail that, you know, as far as her character and as far as if you're a fan of the comics, or, you know, even if your introduction to Catwoman is really only the new Batman Arkham City game, then, you know, they nailed Catwoman, you know, so it was good. That was a poor choice of words, but you know what
not
I'm talking about.
Not saying anything. Moving on. Host's not saying anything.
I really liked Anne Hathaway. That was the part of the movie I was most worried about, that they would just screw up, kind of like when they, you know, because, you know, when they throw extra characters in, and sometimes it's one too many characters, I was afraid of that, and they might mess with the backstory, or it might be too much of the movie is about her. They didn't do that. She fit into the movie perfectly. The thing I was most worried about the film actually was one of the things that worked out the best for it.
Is Harvey Dent back in this?
No, he's dead.
No, he's not.
Yes, he's dead. It's at the beginning. He's dead.
It's at the beginning of this one?
Yeah.
Well, at the end of the last one and the beginning of this one, they kind of rehash it.
Yeah.
I mean, they show a picture of him, but he's not back in the movie.
Okay. Yeah, apparently Aaron Eckhart asked for too much money. No, he didn't. He's dead.
You know, but like I've told everyone who's asked me about the movie, you know what? It was I thought it was good.
Not
as opposed to The Dark Knight, which was excellent.
Yeah, I agree.
And this is probably the thing, if there's ever been something that's going to anger fanboys, those basement dwellers, if it comes to Avengers or Batman, I got to go with the Avengers.
I'm afraid I have to go with Avengers on this one.
Yeah. Going with Avengers.
So Kobe, I think here's your response to that. No. Do you have a setup?
Well,
No, it's put in a good response.
Now that was a good movie.
And then put in Steven's response.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, there we go.
Just mean. Just mean.
Hey, you know what? Gotta put him in their place. Now, Craig, you of course.
I've seen it. Yes.
You have seen it in a professional or casual manner. Can you chat about that?
I can.
Okay.
I actually liked it better than Avengers myself.
Ooh. Wow. How so?
You know what? You want
said the guy who's egging, who's trying to egg on a fight here. In the
you mean by Kobe pushing this button?
Yeah, it's a whole Marvel DC thing that's gonna break
exactly.
out.
No. Oh, great. That means somebody's going to get shot, and he's going to keep releasing albums every 6 months. Go on. I'm sorry, Craig.
No. I liked it because it was a nice end to the story for Nolan, right? Like, he obviously had a clear-cut, you know, storyline that he was going for, and I like that it wrapped it up and kind of put a bow on it, if you will.
Right.
I love the characters. Catwoman, fantastic. Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, fantastic. And it balances the characters really well. I was kind of scared about that as well. Like, I thought it was going to be all Bane all the time, and it was like,
thank God.
Yeah, it balances it out really well. So I liked it. I may be on the minority here, but I liked it.
No, probably not.
Yeah, probably not.
No, you're
ticket sales will dictate.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. With the tickets, the ticket sales will show us. Yeah. Boy, they'll get it.
Be like, oh, wow, made $100 million.
Good
I'm,
filming,
I'm
there, Miss Associate.
Did you play that again? We talked over it.
Wow, that'd be some good filming there, Miss Associate.
No, not that minority. Don't do that. Now that being said, and I'm not saying this just because he's here, because but I got to see this Wednesday night at IMAX. And there are certain moments that were shot for IMAX. Is
correct.
That right?
60 minutes of the 2 hour and I think 43 minute film were shot with IMAX cameras.
And I'd say the first couple scenes where you see it go from widescreen, you know, you see the bars to full.
Yeah.
I mean, once you get past that, you don't notice it. But it is pretty impressive to see on a big screen.
I mean, it truly is kind of a dying art form. Nolan has kind of latched on to, you know, obviously he's a big fan of film and making movies on film.
Actual film, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, not digital, no pixels here.
No.
And, you know, he kind of experimented with using the IMAX cameras early on, and he's really adapted and woven that into his storytelling process. And it looks beautiful in full frame, you know, six story IMAX
with Heinz Field.
Yes.
Well, no, and the thing is, it is, and, you know, once you get past, if you can, you know, just get your mind, this is not filmed in Chicago, it's filmed in Pittsburgh this time around, most of it. It's a beautiful film to look at, and I just saw it on a regular screen, and, you know, I didn't know that it was going to be, like, 60 minutes, because I remember the last one, it might have been, like, half an hour was shot.
20 some odd minutes,
So, like, that, you know, I mean, because of the way it's shot, and I did enjoy the story, just because I said I liked Avengers more didn't mean I don't, because people are going to be like, you hated Batman. Man, I was like,
no, didn't hate
that's
Batman.
Not what I'm
liked
saying.
Liked Batman, love the Avengers.
You know, like I just thought Avengers was a more fun movie to go to. I would say this also, if you're going to take kids with you, you might want to think about the length of the film.
Yeah.
It is a little, it's almost 3 hours long.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, once you add in trailers and whatnot, you're talking about 3 hours sitting in the seat. That and you know what, the tone of the violence is a little bit more realistic. As opposed to Avengers, so I would say, you know, Avengers really does kind of appeal more to
the
children.
Family,
you know,
right,
even though they're both rated PG-13, like it's a lot. It's
this one's real
and,
dark.
And to be fair, you don't see a pencil disappear in this one.
No.
But yeah, I think it's as far as the darker tone.
It's not fantasy violence.
No, it's not.
This is
not
this
at
is,
all.
This is a little bit. It's edgier. It's a little closer to. It's a little bit closer to an R than as just as far as the violence
by the way,
is concerned.
And also. Don't take them to midnight screenings for crying out loud. Don't be an idiot.
Don't be that guy. First of all, I go to midnight screenings so I don't have to be there when children are there.
Yeah, and
let's just be honest.
I have a 10-year-old daughter that wants to go to a midnight screenings. I said, that's great. When you're ready, you can watch midnight movies at home, but you're not ready for it. Of course, she fell asleep in the chair at 9 last night.
Well, there you go.
So, yeah, don't be that guy. All right. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to talk about what's new on DVD and Blu-ray. We'll also preview the IIFF, and we'll get to Dead People We Like, because apparently we have a new name for that segment.
That's
thanks
right.
to you guys.
Yep.
You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
man got on my nerves. He was running me amok. He ridiculed me, calling me a bum. I whooped Batman's ass. 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 I whooped Batman thought he was bad. He was a in the first place. He got knocked to the floor. I whooped Batman's ass. I whooped Batman's ass. I whooped.
Are either one of these any good? Sir?
What?
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So, do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store.
Blockbuster Video. Wow, what a difference.
All Wesley, all the all time. The time. Wow. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@wfyi.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter at Matthew Soci. And we have a blog. And Kobe, you added something to the blog. Oh, yes, this that's week. Right. I forgot about that. Yes. For those who don't know, if you check out the blog, which you can see at filmsociology.tumblr.com. Kobe, in his office, he has an intern for yes, the summer. That's right. And because his summer turned out to be much shorter than mm-hmm. anybody had anticipated, but Kobe's personal intern is a bobblehead of Tyler Hansborough for your Indiana Pacers. Yeah, he's had a big week this week. What did he do this week? Well, we wrote a couple scripts. We had a member come in. He wrote a script? Yeah, he wrote a script. Really? Did you spell check it as he was writing it? I did.
Did he read it back to you?
had a member come in a couple days ago to record a testimonial.
Really?
And yeah, he ran the board for that. Got the I got everything in here set up for him, and then
all he had to do was push a button.
Yeah, he took it from there. He was capable.
Does he know Larry Bird is gone yet?
He does now.
and we're also the other thing Tyler needs to learn this week is how to play with somebody on his team that once wore a uniform that said Duke.
That's right.
So. All right, well, good. It's good to have mm-hmm. Tyler work on. We should have brought him in here for good luck. Now that he would protect us from the fanboys with his white dunks. All right, I'm here with Craig Mintz from the IIFF and IMAX, and Jarrett Moore, WFYI Sage. He's also our world correspondent.
Now world correspondent.
Wow, no, the world.
Oh, yeah, WHIRL. Okay, let's just move on from that.
No, really, if you get a chance, read it. It's a fantastic paper. We highly recommend it.
Crime-fighting publication.
It
since
is
1927.
Crime. So yes. How come Christopher Nolan didn't shoot it in St. Louis? Well,
oh.
He would get equipment would be going missing.
Yeah. same reason that Detroit wasn't even on the list. they are doing a new RoboCop, but it's actually a documentary.
Yes, thank you. And let's not forget my beloved city of Detroit, where they actually tried to get a RoboCop statue, which is no different than, I don't know, say, a Rocky statue in Philly.
Look, RoboCop did more for Detroit than Joe Dumars. And
did he do three things?
Oh, wow. That's
yes. Kobe's favorite. Kobe's
and Barry Gordy. Barry Gordy and Joe Dumars have nothing on RoboCop.
Ah, jeez. All right, let's move on. Chuck Berry. New on DVD and Blu-ray this week. Well, my goal this week was to watch something, anything that wasn't titled The Three Stooges. So I wound up, sorry, I'm not ready for it yet. Not ready. So I wound up watching two films that would have made an odd double feature. I first watched the new
Mel Gibson film Get the Gringo, which 20th Century...
Really?
Yeah, 20th Century Fox put it out.
Honestly, I thought that, when I saw it, I thought that was a joke.
No, no joke on this one. He's a bad guy who winds up in a Mexican...
A bad guy, you
he's
say?
He's a bad guy.
Really?
I know. Well, there's no talking beaver, and apparently there are no Jews in Mexico, even though there's Jesus. But he winds up in a Mexican prison, which looks a lot like a little small city with different class issues, and he's, of course, moving his way up through the ranks to try to get out of the Mexican prison so he can get his loot, which is taken from him by a corrupt Mexican police officer.
What?
I know. So here we have both Mexican and American police officers are corrupt, as well as the prison system. And I think I'm serious. Really? And in this film, it just seems like it wants to remind people of Payback, only with bad voiceover work and a bunch of people we've never seen before. It's a rental, but you don't need to go out of your way to go check it out. It's brutal at times. And of course, it's the thing where Mel Gibson's supposed to be a real bad mofro. He is in the first 10 minutes, but guess what? By the end of the film, even though he's beating people up and shooting people, the heart melts a little bit.
You got to love him.
Yeah. No, we don't. No. Check out those phone messages. Apparently, he can't love anybody. So that is out. But also opening, and this is one I actually preferred more, the new comedy Casa de mi Padre.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, also known as the Will Ferrell Mexican action movie. And I rented it. They didn't send it to me.
Hold on. And this is just how fast Hollywood – I thought that was still coming out.
No, it's out. It's out.
In the movie theater. Like, I thought it was – did it just never –
We had a real small release.
We didn't get it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we did not get it. Chicago, probably the big three.
Wow.
And of course –
Will Ferrell movie that didn't get released. Why?
Well, I'll tell you why. Because – well, first off, I think it's directed by one of the Funny or Die guys. I know they have their – Anna McKay is a producer as well as Will Ferrell. But as I rented this from the store, every copy of this movie had a big green sticker on it that said, "This film is subtitled."
Oh.
And that turns some folks off.
Quite a few people, actually.
Yeah, quite a few.
Yeah, if I wanted to do that, I wouldn't be watching the screen.
So this one is set in
books.
It's set in a Mexican farm. We have Will Ferrell, who's the not smart farm son.
It's dumb.
It's not that dumb, but of course, and I love this gene pool. You don't meet the mom. Of course, the dad loves the older, smarter brother, played by Diego Luna. Yes, and then of course there's a gangster played by Gael Garcia Bernal. So yes, it is a Y Tu Mama Tambien, Diego and Luna reunion. But it's shot like the Telemundo / Mexican action films. It's got a little bit of Grindhouse, Black Dynamite as far as aesthetics. Film snaps, it skips to another reel. There's two probably not needed but really long musical numbers where Will Ferrell's playing the trumpet, and it first sounds like it's he's part of a Mexican band, and then it sounds like Miles Davis. For those who miss Yaz Flute.
Yeah.
But it does capture that kind of action style. Jarrett will probably get complaints about these types of movies but we won't talk about that, but it does capture that spirit, and I have to give props to Ferrell. He did the whole performance in Spanish, and apparently he learned his lines phonetically, and at times it shows, but that's what made it amusing. So Ron Swanson's in this briefly I know that comes as a big shock to anybody. But no, just the fact that they actually made this, and I thought it could have been, this was going in, I thought, well, this might be a fun 60 minutes drawn out to 80, 85. It's actually a pretty decent 85 minute film. So yeah. So go rent
y'all
that.
Love it. So,
y'all
love it. So,
y'all.
That's good. Also out on DVD and Blu-ray, and I wound up watching this last night, the fun titled Salmon Fishing in the Yemen with Ewan McGregor, Kristen Scott Thomas, Emily Blunt. I'm sorry, Mike Perry is not here, our Emily Blunt correspondent. And it's directed by Lasse Hallström, who used to direct What's Eating Gilbert Grape and My Life as a Dog, and now he's doing Nicholas Spark movies and Hashi, A Dog's Tale. And this is the idea of a sheik who wants to grow salmon in the middle of the desert. And so they bring in a fish expert, Ewan McGregor, stay with me, to fly overseas and overview a $50 million project to bring salmon to the desert. And, of course, Emily Blunt is there along the way. And they have some dry banter. It's almost like a Noel Coward play. And Kristin Scott Thomas gets to be the older, domineering authority figure in the film. But let me tell you, this moment kind of sums it up. Ewan McGregor is stuck in a rut with his job and with his marriage. And as he's walking to work on a, probably what looks like a busy 8:30 in the morning, about halfway through the movie, he stops, turns around, and goes the other way while everybody is going in the opposite direction. The only thing missing is him flying through the air into a body of water. So, yeah, it sounds that exciting. I'm sure it was – I don't know if this is based on a true story, and even if it does, it really doesn't matter. Because yeah. Every other film, Dark Knight, is based on a true story if you read the interwebs. But, yeah, not the most exciting film. And I think at the time this came out, more people were occupied at the most exotic Marigold Hotel thing, which looks very similar, and it's a double feature. But, no, this one has a little less of a pulse.
Otto, don't flatter yourself. It wasn't that great.
Okay, we're going to plow through some of the titles. So also, Lockout, the space prison escape movie with Guy Pearce. That's also out. Three Stooges, I already mentioned. Let's move on. Friends with Kids, which reteams Kristen Wiig and John Hamm and Maya Rudolph and Megan Fox and Ed Burns show up for some reason. And then because I haven't watched it yet, but I am a fan of Abel Ferrara, 444 Last Days on Earth with Willem Dafoe, because who else would you want to spend the last day on Earth with the star of Antichrist? And there's a number of old films out on Blu-ray. I think, yes, this is one of the week. I think it seems like either Columbia or Sony or Warner Brothers, they alternate their weeks on just opening up the vault and throwing anything out at you. For instance, did you need a Blu-ray of A Perfect Murder? Andrew Davis remake
just
of...
No, that's not really...
Yeah, Michael Douglas, remember that one? Now, granted, Tad Robinson has a song in it, and I'm sure hopefully he'll get some royalty checks, but that's... a Blu-ray of Next of Kin?
Patrick Swayze with a fiddle?
Helen Hunt... Liam Neeson with a southern accent.
Haven't released a Blu-ray of Roadhouse, and I want to hear nothing about Blu-rays with starring Patrick Swayze.
Well, then I guess I won't bring up Hellraiser 6, Hellseeker. No.
On Blu-ray, they went through the process of putting that on Blu-ray.
Butterfly Effect. Yep. The 1967 musical Camelot. Yeah.
This is why Blu-rays are like $6 now.
Yeah, exactly.
It used to be they were like $30 a piece. You go to Walmart, you can get. They got a bin of them, just like they have.
$5 bin.
Yeah, they're right there.
And, of course, the DVDs are like $2.50 now, right next to them. Oh, let's see, Cellular, you can get that on Blu-ray.
Yeah, all right, okay. I guess.
That's another one. We're keeping that one. The best, probably one of the best Andrew Davis films, Code of Silence. Probably Chuck Norris's best film as a Chicago cop. Better than Lone Wolf McQuaid, which is also out on Blu-ray. Look at that. You can get David Carradine and Chuck Norris back-to-back.
Okay.
Dirty Pretty Things, which I really enjoyed. That was Chiwetel Ejiofor's introduction to a lot of people, as well as Audrey Tautou and Sofia Okonedo. Criterion, of course, has Down by Law, the Jim Jarmusch film with Tom Waits and Roberto Benigni. And shamelessly plug, there is a certain bookstore chain around town. It's not Borders. It's the one that's open. But they are doing a Criterion sale through the end of the month, 50% off. So be aware of that. Since Abel Ferrara has a film that's new on DVD and Blu-ray, one of his older titles, Fear City, which has Billy Dee Williams, Tom Berenger, and Melanie Griffith from the early 80s.
Wow.
Yep. Hard to Kill.
Oh, now there you go.
Kelly LeBrock when she had her old face, and Steven Seagal when he had his old face from the mid-80s.
Before he became the lawman.
That's right. He's coming to Muncie eventually.
They always do.
The original High Noon. Oh, jeez. Wow. The original High Noon with Gary Cooper. The 1956 edition of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the Don Siegel film.
Okay.
Oh, did anybody need Just Cause on Blu-ray? Do we need Sean Connery and Lawrence Fishburne? No. Mean Streets. Scorsese. Excellent Scorsese film. Introduction for a lot of people to Robert De Niro. And then finally on Blu-ray, Murder in the First, Gary Oldman, Kevin Bacon, Christian Slater, and O, which, by the way, I'm seeing Othello this weekend, if you get a chance, of Shakespeare in a Canal, which is going on at 8 o'clock tonight and tomorrow, and I believe there's a matinee on Sunday. But O has nothing to do with that. This is the Mekhi Phifer, Julia Stiles, Josh Hartnett film.
Oh, God, that was bad.
It's Othello without the Shakespearean text.
Without the yellow.
That's right. So there you go. Lots of titles for you. Don't know if you really need those or not.
Not. We don't need. Well, I mean, like, it'd be nice to have, but we don't need them.
Yeah.
So if somebody bought you Code of Silence, or I thought, is it Blu-ray?
I mean, I would get it to
Kobe. Check and see if Roadhouse is on Blu-ray. Could you do that, please? Yeah. I could have.
I have the regular widescreen edition with the director's commentary.
Oh yes, as do I.
Yeah. So
was it bundled with Roadhouse 2?
No.
Oh no, I would not.
Even
have
if I
bought
did, that would be a coaster. That would be a coaster.
Sorry, someone was like, "Oh, have you seen Roadhouse 2?" I said, "Most certainly not."
This is a film show, all right. Craig, how are you, man?
I'm well.
I'll tell you anything else going on at IMAX. So just so we know. What's happening after Dark Knight as far as
the IMAX?
Yeah, at the IMAX.
We're still trying to line up the fall programming. Okay. Obviously, the next Bond movie comes out. Skyfall is going to be an IMAX. Hobbit is going to be an IMAX release. So there's a lot of great product on the horizon.
And that's the one that's shot. The Hobbit, it's some
48 frames a second.
It's either controversy or people think it's really cool.
And only a few people have seen it at 48 frames. Yeah. Like, it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out.
Okay.
So, and of course... last night was the big opening.
Last night was the 12:01 screening of The Dark Knight Rises to a sold out capacity crowd.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
So, and how many days is it showing?
It's got a run. You know, for us, it's probably going to be a 6 to 8 week run. You know, maybe it won't occupy the whole schedule, but it'll be on for the next few weeks. Okay.
And of course, the film festival, which also had its premiere last night.
Yeah.
If you go to Nouveau News Weekly, you can see Hugh Laurie on the cover, who's going to be back in Carmel in August with his New Orleans band. And of course, in my world, Emma calls him Stuart Little's dad. Emma's never watched House. Not ready for it yet. She's too busy finishing up season 5 of Mad Men. But tell us about some of the events that are going on this weekend and for the rest of the run of the festival.
Yeah. The festival runs through the 29th. The 29th, we're actually showing our best of. It's the Indianapolis International Film Festival is a juried festival.
Yes.
Filmmakers submit their films and they go through a screening process. Once the films kind of boiled down to what we play, they actually go through a jurying process. For each of our categories, the categories are American Spectrum, which are your domestic films. You've got World Cinema, which are kind of the subtitled films, typically Matter of Fact, which are documentaries, and it became so popular that we called it out as its own category this year, which is Hoosier Lens, which is all kind of films being made here in the Hoosier State or by Hoosiers.
Cool. And I just should say, full disclosure, I'm one of the judges in the world category. Still better, Casa de mi Padre didn't make it.
You can't compete with that.
Sorry. But also, Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock, I'm going to be a part of the Casting the Critical Eye. It's a film critics forum where you could meet just about anybody who substitute hosted this show, Kobe. I believe, I know Ed Johnson-Ott's going to be there. I believe the guys from the Film Yap. I'm trying to figure who else. But anyway, familiar faces.
Those are the famous
ones. We're the jerks that sit in the row with the seats with the piece of paper over it says reserved for press, which we really, really appreciate. Give us some of the other highlights of what I know. I'm not asking you to pick a favorite, what are some of the other big events going on? Or otherwise, I'll just open up the guide here, which you can pick up in your local Nouveau, and I'm just going to throw titles at you.
Ooh, throw titles at me.
All right.
This will be fun.
Black Baseball in Indiana. Is that true?
Yes. Yes, it is.
It's part of the Sports in Indiana Shorts program, right?
Yes.
Okay. Let's see what else we got here.
Update, Roadhouse is available on Blu-ray.
Oh, well.
See, you should get out.
You stop.
I'm leaving right from here.
How about I can throw out a couple ones?
Please
yeah,
do.
Yeah, definitely.
Specific events.
And I'll even tie it to what we've spoke about earlier in the show. A really good documentary that we have is a film called Detropia, which is about Detroit and kind of the economic hardfalls that have fallen on Detroit and kind of what they're trying to do to combat it. So it's an absolutely beautiful film. Let's see, some international films. I'm going to try to mix it up. Patang.
Patang, yes.
Which is a fantastic film.
The eye-catching title, The Woman in the Septic Tank,
yes.
Which is a Filipino.
Yes.
Which is a kind of a fun film about filmmaking.
Yeah.
And of course, critics love films about filmmaking. We have Patang. Dollhouse is another one that's running around Tilt.
Yes.
Madonna's Pig. It's not Lady Gaga.
No, it's an interesting film.
But yeah, it's kind of the and that's kind of the Doc Hollywood fish cars.
Yeah.
Kind of fish out of water story, or in this case, fish stuck in a small town
that he can't get out of.
That's right. And he was raised in a small town. We also have The Human Factor as part of the shorts program.
Yep.
And you also have a collection. Tell us about some of the ones, the shorts programs. You have stuff like Human Touch, Pretty Pictures, One Coin, Two Sides, Can't Look Away.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
So, you know, when these films come in, obviously we don't have these shorts categories built or predetermined before we get the movies. We really let the movies kind of pair themselves, if you will. Subject matters are very similar in a lot of these films, so we kind of group them together as a shorts program and then kind of let it just grow itself kind of organically, if you will.
And this is a golden opportunity because there's a lot of these films... I'm not sure you're going to see them anywhere.
Yeah. There's a couple.
There's a couple.
A few years from now, you may see theatrical distribution, but a lot of these movies, and that's kind of one of the missions of the festival, is we want to bring these movies to Indianapolis because you may never get to see these movies kind of in a theater in this scenario.
Exactly. Tell us about the closing night event.
Yeah, closing night this year is going to be at actually Earth House downtown. We're showing a film called Somebody Up There Likes Me.
Now, this is not a remake of the Paul Newman film about Rocky Graziano.
Definitely is not.
Completely not.
It's a really cute film. And again, kind of to go back to an earlier topic, it's got Nick Offerman in it. So,
okay.
From Parks and Rec. So the screening will be there, then the after party will be downstairs at Earth House, and then we also do our awards ceremony. And the price for closing night includes the party, and that has food and beverage and all that fun
You'll
stuff.
Eat and drink your money's
exactly.
worth, I assure you. So now, and everything else is at the IMA?
IMA for the most part, although okay. we do have evening screenings starting on Monday through the week at Earth House.
Okay. And where can people go for information and tickets and
IndieFilmFest.org, IndieFilmFest.org. You can get our full schedule. You can download an app to actually have the schedule on your smartphones. You can print off a schedule. There's reviews. Obviously, there's pictures, trailers of all the films. Try it before you buy it, I guess. Check it out, and you can actually build a schedule within our website, print it off, send it to your phone. It's pretty neat stuff.
And how many films are being shown this year?
140-ish. Like in the 140 range. When you factor all the shorts in
sure.
and kind of the event tentpole films.
And how many have you personally seen?
Me personally, I'm kind of upper level, so I don't watch them all. There are a lot of staff. Lisa, obviously, with the film festival, has seen every single one of them. I've seen a couple dozen.
Okay.
That I actually get to put my eyes on. I've actually not seen any of the shorts yet. I'm excited to actually see the shorts programs.
Now, are they a collection of shorts, or are there also shorts that are with a longer feature?
Both.
Most
of them are in the collections, although there are some films. One that comes to mind is a film called The Show Must Go On, which is about a circus family, a high wire family, the Walendas, the guy that
yes.
just went across Niagara.
Yeah.
And it's paired with a short film that was actually made by a local filmmaker about elephants. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Excellent. So it's running all week. Ladies and gentlemen, go take a chance on a movie.
Yeah, definitely come out. It's a risk worth it.
Exactly. So now that I have you here, because I couldn't be on the show with Lisa, so this is the Film Sociology's obligatory annual question. When are you guys going to show The Room at the festival? You know it's going to bring in a lot of people.
Hey, I do.
You know, if the price is right, and I kind of know how much that price is, you could bring you could bring in Tommy Wiseau for a Q&A, which Kobe and I have witnessed.
Yep.
It is
something to behold.
It is something to behold.
We'll take it. We'll definitely take it into serious consideration.
That's what you guys say every year.
That's what you always say.
Kobe, hit the ID. You don't have it ready?
No, I don't have it ready. I didn't know you were gonna hit me with that.
Anytime we bring up this film, don't we eventually wind up getting to play this?
Yeah.
I'll make you play the Padma ID if you keep that up. Just so I can remind. I may not have gotten Pam Grier on the show today, but I still have a Padma ID, and that's all better for it. I tried. Now, of course, she's in town.
Yes.
I have no idea where she's playing. You have to check her Twitter account, but she's in Indianapolis. And if you listen very carefully, my wife is laughing her head off because I brought this up. So do you have it now?
Hey, everyone. This is Tommy Wiseau, and you're listening now to Film Sociology at the WFYI Indianapolis.
You just want him to get through with it and finish it, but he drags it out.
Try the other one. You know, the other one's even longer. We got two out of this man.
Hi, you listening? Film Sociology, WFYI, Indianapolis. Have a groovy time. Listen it.
That could be the tagline for Film Sociology. Listen it. That or Elmore Leonard.
It's a real show. It's terrific.
That's my favorite, probably. Elmore Leonard saying that this is a real show. Thank you, sir. All right. Well, I want to get to – oh, speaking of – I'm setting you up, Cove. This is a new segment that you guys were able to dub recently because there's three I want to talk about.
Doing our – the annual show of Dead People We Like.
There's a pretty big one this week.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Yes.
I guess that's what we're calling the obit section of Film Sociology is Dead People We Like. Wow. So I know last week the guys brought up Richard Zanuck, you know, the producer, and of course one of the few producers fired by his dad. Thanks a lot. But you know, say what you will, the man had a pretty impressive titles of films. He also got two Best Picture winners in his career with The Sting and Driving Miss Daisy. Mm. I know he was an unlisted producer on The Sound of Music. But one of the first things he produced, and I love looking at the smaller pictures that he was able to build up on, but he was a producer of the horror film The Snake Film with Strother Martin and Dirk Benedict from 1973, which Spengoolie played on his show a couple months back. Emma likes that. That's the one where, yeah, Dirk Benedict gets turned into a giant snake. And because of Strother Martin. So he produced that. He produced Willie Dynamite.
Oh, for real?
Yes, for real. The blaxploitation film starring Gordon from Sesame Street. So there's a link.
Yeah.
Nobody brought that up to Gordon when he was here.
You
that
know
kind
what?
Of bummed me out.
Because I didn't go to Kids in the Park that year.
I know.
I would have brought
either.
It up. And...
in a heartbeat. I have the soundtrack. I have the DVD.
And it is available on Netflix right now.
It
and
is.
So it's put it in your Instagram.
So there, out of respect to Richard Zanuck, rent Willie Dynamite. You'll be a better person for it.
Would you have also asked Grover if he heard about that story that a young Michael Jackson was telling Oscar that day?
Probably, yeah. We're going to have to post that picture up on the Film Sociology
yes.
Website.
Oh, my. Yes. Okay. He also did Sugarland Express, the Spielberg film nobody talks about with Goldie Hawn and William Atherton.
Yeah, because I have no idea about it, so no one ever talked about it to me.
Yeah.
That's all right. This one he made before Jaws and after Duel.
Oh, okay.
So The Black Windmill with Michael Caine, directed by Don Siegel. The Iger Sanction with Clint Eastwood. Then he did that little movie called Jaws, where the shark didn't work. Jaws 2, because he was supposed to. The Island, because apparently Peter Benchley's grocery list got made into a film back then, kind of like Stephen King in the 80s. The Verdict, which probably has my favorite Paul Newman performance, right up there with Slapshot. Why do you laugh at that? That's true.
Slapshot's awesome.
Slapshot is awesome. Another film movie. we can never play on the radio. Both Cocoons and MacArthur, if you want Gregory Peck as Douglas MacArthur, and so on and so forth. So and of course he did a bunch of the Tim Burton films. Unfortunately, his last film was as a producer was Dark Shadows.
Oh,
yeah.
Hold on. Now, have you seen any of these Slapshot sequels?
I saw two. I saw because I wound up interviewing the Hansons and I was afraid they were gonna ask about it, so I thought I did. Oh, man,
to be prepared. Eh?
I'm glad they got it.
Stephen Baldwin, didn't he do one?
That was two. That was two. And then they did a minor league or a kids version with three, And I never saw that one. I don't really want to. Yeah. So sorry, guys. However, Goon is a really, really good film we're checking out.
Okay.
Dare I say, best performance ever from Sean William Scott. Which isn't saying a whole lot.
And that's on Netflix now, too.
It is on Netflix. It's out there. Also, Celeste Holm, Academy Award-winning actress, died at the age of 95. She won an Academy Award for Gentleman's Agreement with Gregory Peck. She was also in All About Eve in 1950. But other films include The Snake Pit, Tender Trap, High Society, the musical version of Philadelphia Story, the 1973 version of Tom Sawyer, which had the kid from Family Affair, and I think Jodie Foster was in that. Played Ted Danson's mom in Three Men and a Baby. And the one that's most near and dear to my wife's heart, she played the fairy godmother in the 1965 TV version of Cinderella with Leslie Ann Warren, which was an annual event for a lot of kids on TV then. Finally, TV director William Asher, who was known for directing the majority of the episodes of I Love Lucy. And if you go through his list, it's kind of a lot of weird TV. It's like you remember he directed episodes of Crazy Like a Fox. He did the I Dream of Jeannie reunion movie, Private Benjamin, The Bad News Bears. Apparently, any movie made into a sitcom, he directed it.
Wow.
Dukes of Hazzard, Alice, Operation Petticoat, Marcus Welby. But he also directed such films as Fireball 500, How to Stuff a Wild Bikini, Beach Blanket Bingo, Bikini Beach, Muscle Beach Party, Johnny Cool, and Beach Party. So he kind of launched the careers of Frankie and Annette and then got a shovel and dug up Buster Keaton and Vincent Price and got them some work as well. There you go.
Well, that's where he got a spot in heaven.
Will he be? No, the question is, will he be in the montage of the Academy Awards? I want a picture. I want William Asher and Annette Funicello twisting on a beach.
We'll start sending those emails now to make sure.
We will start sending those emails. Cole, how are we doing on time?
We got two.
Two? Well, I guess I'll save this for later. But The Onion this week, appropriately enough, had 20 memorably inarticulate movie performances labeled mumblecore. And, of course, on the cover is Heath Ledger and Brokeback Mountain. Including Sylvester Stallone in Fist and First Blood, that monologue near the end. Benicio del Toro went, what did you say? Orson Welles in Macbeth. Ewan Bremmer in Trainspotting. Vincent D'Onofrio in Men in Black. Marlon Brando in Apocalypse Now. Should be Marlon Brando the last 30 years of his career.
Should be Marlon Brando. You know what his last, role was ever?
No.
He played a planet. In the animated version of Transformers.
He was a... No, that's Orson Welles.
That was Wells.
Okay, yeah. I thought, okay.
No, Marlon Brando was a planet.
Oh, okay, that's... I forget that they're not the same person sometimes.
Fat, eccentric guys, I know. Hi, I'm Matthew Sosie. Mickey Rourke and Johnny Handsome, Linda Manns in Days of Heaven, Giovanni Ribisi in Anything, most notably Contraband, Benicio del Toro in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, and Not the Usual Suspects. That's kind of a bummer. Martin Short in Father of the Bride, Michael Keaton in Much Ado About Nothing, Jennifer Jason Leigh in Mrs. Parker in The Vicious Circle, Helena Bonham Carter in Sweeney Todd, Eric Roberts in Running Train, Vin Diesel in Pitch Black or Anything, Bob Dylan in Anything or Mask and Anonymous, Lee Marvin in Paint Your Wagon, You Shouldn't Be Singing, and Brad Pitt in the film Snatch. There. Here are some words to live by.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Craig, plug the websites.
IMAXIndie.com for IMAX, Showtimes for Dark Knight Rises, and IndieFilmFest.org for the film festival.
And Jared, if people want to get in touch with you about community ambassadors stuff.
Log on to WFYI.org. We are hiring, so please go ahead and make sure that you attach your resume. That's very important.
Go to a movie, any movie this weekend. You deserve it. We'll be better for it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.